Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. We're always taking callers for him to hang up on. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, time for a little baseball talk on the Jeff Blair Show. Jean-Paul Morosi is going to join us at 11:40. Mike Tanier, national lead writer for Bleacher Report, national lead NFL writer. He'll be along at 11:15. We'll ask him about the Buffalo Bills crisis. We're already going to call it a crisis. And get his take as well on week 11 in the NFL. Three big games, Lions, Cardinals, Eagles, Packers, and the Patriots, Colts. So Mike will join us, and he's always got something original to say about the NFL. We look forward to talking to him. But out of the gate, the Toronto Blue Jays made a trade on Wednesday night, sending Anthony Gose to the Detroit Tigers for Devon Travis. It's an interesting deal for a variety of reasons. First of all, Devon Travis is a second baseman, and as anybody who's watched the Blue Jays knows, the Blue Jays have had a gaping need at that position organizationally for a while. Ryan Goins, a fine defensive infielder, but let's say politely that he's a work in progress offensively. Devon Travis joins the organization. It's kind of an interesting story because the trade was made literally hours after Baseball America named him the Detroit Tigers' top prospect. So kind of an interesting day for Devon Travis. And you can follow Devon Travis, by the way, on Twitter at DevoTrav. And Devon Travis joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Devon, thanks a lot for doing this. Welcome to Toronto, because I'm sure we're going to see you here at some point this year. But I've got to ask you about Wednesday. That I don't know if anybody ever expects to be traded, but I understand that you kind of had an inkling, didn't you, that something may be up?
Jeff, thank you for having me on, man. And I'm excited to know with the opportunity to be in this new awesome organization, man. I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, it was a crazy day. I actually was just walking into my house. It's a normal night, hanging out with my family, about to sit on the couch and watch some football, and I get a phone call from our minor league director of player development, Dave Owen, and I just got a weird feeling as soon as I got it. It was 10:11 at night. And as soon as I saw his name pop up on my phone, I showed my parents and I go, man, I think I'm about to get traded. Because I couldn't really figure out, you know, any other reason, to get a phone call that late at night from Devo. And sure enough, I answered the phone call and we talked for a few minutes and then he told me. So it was, wow, crazy day.
What did the Jays said to you? What has Alex Anthopoulos said to you about what their plans are?
We talked for about 10 minutes, and I was honestly so shook up at the time. As soon as I got off the phone with him, I said to my parents, wow, I don't even know what I just said. It was honestly just awe. It was absolutely, insane. Just because, like you said, it's not that you don't ever expect to get traded. I think it's just when you do get traded, it actually kind of hits you like a ton of bricks. Like, wow, this actually just happened. I mean, you could tell yourself that it might happen, and still there's really no way to prepare yourself for it, I believe. But we just talked. We basically just talked, and he welcomed me to the organization, told me he's excited to have me there. Just to stay with my normal off-season regiment, and when I come into spring training, we'll see how things go. And depending on who else, sign from here on out, will depend on my opportunity, going into this next year. So, like I always tell everybody, all you can ever ask for is a chance. It's never any fun when anything's ever given to you or know, to have no chance at all. So all you can ask for is a chance, and that's what he told me I'll have here, so I'm excited about that.
And just to be clear, because the Jays do have openings in a few places, they view you as an infielder, as a second baseman, do they?
Yeah, correct. That was one of the real cool things. I do remember when he called me, it was basically the first thing he said. He said, you know, hey, you know, welcome to the Blue Jays. We're excited to have you. And that outfield glove you have, you can go ahead and throw that thing away. So that was pretty exciting to, you know, to hear that off the get-go, that I am viewed as a second baseman again.
Devin Travis joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Now, when the Tigers went out and acquired Ian Kinsler, what's going through your mind at that time? Because I think a lot of people look at that and go, okay, that's a pretty significant block there. Did you, even back then, did you prepare yourself for a possible position shift, or even start thinking maybe a little bit that a trade might be in the works back then? Or Devin, were you at the stage of your career where, hey, you know what, that's fine, I can't control that organization goes out and acquires somebody else, I've just got to go about having the best year I can have at Erie and you know, let things fall where they may?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's something that, you know, I try to never get caught up in. I don't really like to, you know, to have to, you know, see or worry about what's ahead of me. Everyone always says that you're playing for 29 other teams, so I try my best to keep that in my head and to, you know, to believe that, because, as you said, it's something that nobody can control. I don't blame the Tigers one bit for going out to get Ian, you know, Ian Kinsler. If I had the opportunity to get Ian Kinsler, I wouldn't really care who was, you know, who's mm-hmm. coming up behind him either. You know, yeah, I was a little bit like, man, this may not be the team that, you know, I actually ever have a chance to, you know, to play and at the highest level with at the same time. I tried to prepare myself as best I could, because I felt like one day, you know, I probably won't be a Tiger. Mm-hmm. With what was ahead of me, but yeah, I guess you could say that. I tried to prep myself as good as I could.
What type of a hitter are you? We've heard people describe you as a Jose Altuve type of hitter, which, you know, I think people look at somebody's height and they automatically try to lump a guy in that particular category. Alex Anthopoulos described you as a baseball player. And, you know, he meant that I think people around the game know when you call somebody a baseball player, that's pretty much one of the highest compliments you can give a guy. And we had Clint Longenecker from Baseball America on yesterday, and he did a lengthy piece with you in 2013. And he was saying, man, that's a perfect description of this kid. He said, this kid can sit down and talk to you about hitting for an hour. Then the only way you do that is if you're a quote unquote baseball player. How do you look at yourself?
Dang, I would never come out and say I'm like Jose Altuve. I mean, that guy is something special. At the same token, that's definitely someone who I kind of try to envision myself following, a guy like that. You know, I am a smaller guy. I don't have the luxury of mishitting many balls and hitting balls out or mishitting balls and hitting doubles in the gap. I honestly have to, you know, go up there with a plan, and I have to stick with that. I have to tighten up my strike zone a little more than normal guys. I can't swing at the pitches that, you know, are a little bit off the plate or a little bit up, a little bit down. I really have to, you know, I have to tighten up my strike zone and look for pitches that I can handle, and go from there. Cause I don't have that luxury, like I said, of being able to hit many different, you know, many different pitches in every different spot. I have mm-hmm. to know what kind of hitter I am, and I think that's something on why Jose Altuve is so successful, because, you know, he swings at strikes, he swings at his pitches, and when the pitchers make their pitches, well, you know what, 95% of the time when pitchers make their pitches, regardless who the hitter is, unless it's a guy like, you know, Miguel Cabrera, Mike Trout, you got your guys who can just hit anything in the world, 95% of the time when the pitcher makes his pitch, you're going to be out anyway.
You know, Devin, I had talked to Scout yesterday, who said, and I passed on the information that everybody else had been saying about you to him. The guy laughed and said he went to FSU, so he knows how to play. He knows how to hit. He knows how to work a count. He knows to get on base. He said FSU, one thing about FSU kids is they know they know that aspect of the game. He said it's a really, really smart baseball program, and kids that have success in it, he said, have to really, really have an understanding of the game. It really does seem to be kind of part and parcel of being part of that program, doesn't it?
I couldn't say enough for what Mike Martin Jr., Coach Shoup, Coach Bell did for me down there. Coming in, it was tough. They're very, 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 very big on swinging at strikes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, you know, most baseball players, especially coming into college, we kind of just swing at anything as we're going through high school. You know, the talent obviously isn't the same from high school to college. And you get up there and you notice, wow, like you can't hit every pitch. You know, the plate's 21 inches wide, and it's not made to hit it everywhere on there. You have to learn your strengths. You have to find out things that you're successful at, and pitches that you just aren't going to hit, you gotta let those go and stick to a plan. And you know, it definitely gives you the best chance to, you know, be successful if you're swinging at strikes, no matter who the hitter is. At the same time, I do swing at a ton of balls. I'm not a guy who only swings at strikes, but I do try to tell myself, hey, you know, stick with the plan, get pitches within the strike zone, pitches you can handle, and that was the foundation at FSU. So I'm very thankful for them there for that.
Devin Travis joins the Jeff Blair Show. You also, of course, have received the unofficial official Blue Jays welcome in that Marcus Stroman tweeted a shout out to you. You and Marcus go back a bit, don't you?
Yeah. Marcus and I have been playing each other since.
I think the phone lines dropped, Devin. We're gonna try to get Devin back, because I want to finish that discussion with him about Marcus Stroman. One of the things I really like about Marcus Stroman is you can tell a guy wants to be a real good teammate, and when he shouts out, when he sends out a tweet shouting out to guy, I think it's pretty much an indication of that. We have Devin Travis back with us. Yeah, sorry about that. That was our bag. Tell us a little bit about your relationship with Marcus Stroman and how far back you guys go.
Yeah, our freshman year of college, we played each other. He went to Duke. I went to FSU, both teams in the ACC, and Stroman was actually a second baseman his freshman year. He was actually a pretty good hitter. He could run, and he plays all eight innings in the field, and the ninth inning of that game, his freshman year, he comes in and pitches. We're all excited. We're like, oh, you know, they're bringing in a smaller guy. It's our chance to get some hits, and he gets on the mound, and the first pitch is 95 miles per hour. And we all look at each other like, who in the heck is this guy? And ever since that day, honestly, I was pretty intrigued by the guy. He's a special talent. I've grown to know him. He's a really good guy. And, yeah, it's been a lot of fun following him. It's a guy that I always anytime I saw him on a lineup card, whenever I had to face him, it was a pretty bad day for me. And I'm excited, you know, at least be on the same side of the ball as him now.
And he was blowing bubbles back then too, right?
He's something else, blowing bubbles. He fears absolutely nobody in the world. He looks way too confident up there. It's something that you feel when you face him. And yeah, he's got it, man. I don't really ever even remember getting a hit off the guy. He's dang special.
Hey, Devin, we really appreciate you joining us today. It's great to have you aboard. Great to have you in the organization. We look forward to seeing you in spring training. Thanks for doing this. And by the way, how's the rehab going from the core muscle injury?
It's going very, very well. I'm 100%. I feel great. I'm just going through basically the normal off-season program, and I'll be ready to go in spring training for sure. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Cool. We'll talk to you then. Take care.
Thank you.
It's Devin Travis. I think we're going to enjoy having him around. He's the second baseman the Jays got from the Detroit Tigers for Anthony Ghost. And look, you know how much I like dealing with Anthony Ghost. I thought he was a pretty good kid as well, but it wasn't going to work out here. And I got to think having a bazillion hitting coaches through his career with the Blue Jays probably hasn't helped either, but it wasn't going to work out here. And the Jays really, really did need, they needed something at second base. Maybe Meiser is Turris as a second baseman this year. Maybe Brett Laurie is at second base. Maybe Alex Anthopoulos adds a third baseman. But the fact of the matter is, at some point, this organization was going to need to get somebody in at second base who can bring it defensive, who can bring it defensively and offensively. And Ryan Goins is a terrific defender. Ryan Goins is going to be a good utility player. I don't see him as an everyday second baseman. This kid, again, just going by what people say, a couple of scouts, you know, everybody says this kid has a chance to be an everyday second baseman. And they all say the same thing. His baseball IQ is off the charts. It's a guy who understands the game. Now, whether he turns into another Jose Altuve, no one knows. But a lot of people in this organization feel a lot better about their infield situation going forward today than they did yesterday. So the NFL week gets started in, I guess, a disappointing form for a lot of people around here. A 22-9 loss, the Buffalo Bills to the Miami Dolphins. We took some calls from Bills fans, and I made the point that driving home after the Raptors game last night, I have to admit, I flipped on WGR 550 just because it's, you just have to. It's a guilty pleasure listening to Bills fans vent after a game. This seemed to go beyond the usual venting. There was a palpable sense of just raising the white flag and just get this over with already at 5-5. Mike Tanier is a national lead writer for Bleacher Report, NFL national lead writer for Bleacher Report. He's co-author of Football Outsiders Almanac. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Tanier. Mike Tanier joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Mike, before we look ahead to the other games in Week 11, some big games, Lions, Cardinals, Eagles, Packers, Patriots, Colts, a game of particular interest to me and to you as well. I just want to ask you about the Bills. 5-5, no first-round pick next year, no idea who the quarterback's going to be next year, except I think we can all agree it won't be Kyle Orton. And now you're starting to hear more and more that Doug Marone's job could very much be in jeopardy. What the hell does this franchise do right now?
I think that little blip on the radar that you get when a new owner comes in and everybody looks very busy and a new quarterback takes over and the opponents don't know what to expect, I think that has passed. You know, that passed a couple of wins against the Jets, against the Vikings, and now we're getting into the reality that you put into the lineup a 32-year-old journeyman backup and you handed him the keys. When he's in the game, and then when you lose Spiller, and then when you have some of the other speed guys that were creating this kind of spread offense that you were trying to have some success with last year, you don't have that. You don't have this fast-paced, fast-moving, up-tempo, option-flavored offense anymore. You've got something much more plotting, and it's not something that works to Doug Marone's strength. So I think as a franchise, you have to look seriously at where you are, and the ownership is going to do that and say, once again, I hate to say this to Bills fans, but once again, it's turn the page time. And it seems to have happened very suddenly because it looked like, well, you know, maybe we'll get some traction behind Marone and Manuel. But it came apart relatively quickly. I think it might have come apart a little bit too quickly in the beginning. And, that's kind of the harsh reality. I mean, the good news is you have an outstanding defensive front seven, the kind that can keep you in games, the kind of win games. But I look at that offense and say, okay, without Spiller, without Jackson, with Watkins still developing, with Orton being a very station-to-station quarterback, how do you expect to move the ball against better opponents?
Mike Tanier joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. All right, I want to shift focus to some of the other games this weekend, in particular the game that I think has got a lot of people's attention, Patriots-Colts. The Colts, and you've got a piece up right now on Bleacher Report and the website, which is interesting reading. And basically what it says is that, and I think a lot of people will buy into this, that the Colts are probably as good as they are and as much as they're going to make the playoffs, we know all that, they're still probably a year away from breaking through that glass ceiling and becoming and being put in the same category as the Patriots or the Broncos, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're a tricky team to evaluate because everybody in their division is a rebuilding team or a team like the Jaguars has been rebuilding for a decade. And, you know, so you go out and they win 44-17, they win 41-17 against some of these other opponents, and then they get hammered by the Steelers, and you say, well, who is this team? And, you know, you got to kind of look at them and see what really happens. And, you know, one of the things that pops out right away is, you know, they had a loss to the Broncos, they had a loss to the Eagles, and they had a loss to the Steelers. And it combined in those games, they had one sack. They had one sack of the opposing quarterback, whereas their overall sack stats look pretty good. And you say, oh, well, what happened? Five sacks against the Jaguars, four against the Titans. So when you start looking at them, you see there's a couple of major flaws. And one of them is their pass rush is really not very good. They kind of have to blitz, where they have to face a really bad opponent can generally get sacks. Their secondary consists kind of Vontae Davis, who's a Pro Bowl cornerback, and a lot of guys who need a pass rush to make themselves, you know, effective. And they still have problems with their running game, and it particularly comes up at the goal line where, you know, they can't count on Trent Richardson to pound the ball in, so they wind up kicking field goals. And when you're facing teams like the Broncos and the Steelers, you say, well, we're going to trade a touchdown for a field goal. Or the same thing with the Patriots, of course. That's not going to work. You have to punch it in. You put them all together, and that's where you get this team that is good enough for the playoffs, but then they go in there, and it's kind of like they're the sparring partners for the Broncos and the Patriots.
Mike Tanier of Bleacher Report joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. And you make a good point in this article as well about Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck can get in a shootout with anybody, but it'd be really nice if Andrew Luck could just have one of those games where he spends a lot of time handing the ball off. You know, I mean, shootout, you don't want to do a shootout 16 weeks of the season. It's just not good.
And you don't want to be at the four-yard line saying, okay, well, we're going to run the slant, and then we're going to run the shovel pass, and then we're going to have Andrew Luck do an end-around scramble and try to jump on the pylon and fumble because he's a quarterback. He's not a running back. You want to be able to say, okay, at this point, we know we can get seven doing this. And another thing they have trouble with is when they've got a lead, and it's a seven-point game, they're still throwing the ball. And it's like, well, a lot of teams do that now, but they're still throwing the ball because they have to, because if they hand off on 1st and 10, it's 2nd and 9, and they don't accomplish anything. So all these places situationally where a Tom Brady can call on his running backs to punch the ball in or give him 3rd and 1, and so can Peyton Manning usually, even though it's like some second-string running back, he can get out there and get you 4 yards, 5 yards with the lead. Andrew Luck hasn't had that. Bradshaw is pretty good, but they're very worried about his carry totals because of his durability and age. So they're stuck throwing the ball. And what happens a lot is you get these comebacks, and the Eagles got a comeback against them, and some other teams had some near comebacks against them. Another thing you can't afford to do if you're trying to put away a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning.
All right, so of the suddenly emerging backup quarterbacks, Mark Sanchez and Drew Stanton, who has a better chance of being the guy who writes a successful conclusion to the story that they've just started? Who's got the better chance of doing it, Sanchez?
Well, I think so, and I think if we take a deep breath and say who's the better quarterback, well, Sanchez has gone to the playoffs and won games against Tom Brady and Peyton Manning in the playoffs and has done some of those things and started, whereas Drew Stanton, I believe, is like 4-2 or 3-3 as a starter across 6 years. So that shouldn't be a surprising answer, but I'm pulling up the schedule for the Eagles right now. It's not an easy schedule moving forward. The Seahawks are on it, and then the Packers this week is a very tough game. But the Titans are on it, and the Giants are on it, and the Redskins are on it. So you can kind of easily see a 10-6, 11-5 finish if you say Sanchez is going to go out there and hand the ball off and play within himself. Then you look at Stanton in the upcoming schedule. Lions this week, brutal defense. Seahawks next week. Then there's a little bit of a break. Seahawks at the end, 49ers at the end, and it's a much tougher road to 10-6, 11-5, simply because of the opposition. So I think Sanchez can get out there and get his team to the playoffs. It's just a much easier simply because of the schedule that he faces in the weeks to come.
Hey, do you think that having Mark Sanchez working Chip Kelly's offense, is that maybe even a little better than Nick Foles working that offense?
Well, I don't know because, you know, if you go longitudinally across the last 2 years and you see what Foles accomplished last year, he was doing an excellent job. And I think if we again, are sober about who Mark Sanchez is and say, well, are the turnovers going to go away forever because Mark Sanchez are out there? No, go watch some tape of 2011 and 2012 and get back to me. One of the things Sanchez was good at, sort of a set, read, throw, rhythm passing. He was good at that. You know, he would get into the streaks where everything was just going smoothly. He was delivering the ball short places in space. That was good. When you had to do more complicated things, that was when things would start to get crazy for the New York Jets. And a lot of Chip Kelly's offense has that. You know, there's not a lot of quarterback running. It's a lot of play action fake, toss the ball, play action fake, toss the ball. I think Sanchez can work well in that situation. It is going to play to his strength and minimize some of his weaknesses.
Mike, it was good of you to join us this morning. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
Mike Tanier is the NFL national lead writer for Bleacher Report. He is also co-author of Football Outsiders Almanac. You can follow him at Mike Tanier. They said he's got an original take on the NFL. The article he has in Bleacher Report right now about the Indianapolis Colts and the glass ceiling is terrific. It's a pretty good read ahead of what should be a good game between Patriots and the Colts this weekend. Time to go back and talk a little baseball. Big news, according to Ken Rosenthal of Fox Sports, the Miami Marlins and Giancarlo Stanton are now talking about a 12-year, $320 million contract. Originally, the report was 10 years, $300 million. Now it's 12, $320 million. It would be the biggest contract in baseball history. Not, some are saying, the biggest contract in sports history. It won't even be the biggest current contract. A fellow named Cristiano Ronaldo is just a little bit ahead of what Giancarlo Stanton will make. Nonetheless, it's an interesting deal because it's one thing to give a guy a long-term contract to cover his arbitration year. It's another thing to give a guy a long-term contract to cover the remainder of his arbitration years and maybe one or two free agent years. This basically covers Giancarlo Stanton through the prime of his career. This basically marries Giancarlo Stanton to one organization for the prime of his career. Although, as we've seen with Jeffrey Loria, long-term contracts aren't always what you think they might be. Jean-Paul Morosi is a national baseball writer at Fox Sports. We'll talk to him about where things stand with the Marlins and Giancarlo Stanton. We'll talk to him about the impact that contract may have. And we'll get his take on the suggestion that the Detroit Tigers thought it was the Blue Jays who were most likely to poach Victor Martinez from them. What does that say about the Blue Jays' intentions this offseason? Jean-Paul Morosi will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So it only makes sense we have Jean-Paul Morosi on, considering the fact that we had Chris Chelios on yesterday and Chris Draper on today. It's like, you almost think Greg Brady's programming the damn show with all the Detroit stuff. Anyhow, Jean-Paul Morosi.
Honored to be in the same sense as those gentlemen. Thank you, Jeff.
Which gentlemen? Chelios and surely not Brady.
Three of the Detroit greats. I believe that that's the second production line there. Chelios, Draper, and Greg Brady.
Mm. All right.
Close to it, right?
Mm. I guess. 12 years, Mr. Morosi.
In the great city of Toronto.
Things great. Mr. Morosi, 12 years and $322 million. Or $320 million is the figure that your colleague Ken Rosenthal is using as a possible Giancarlo Stanton deal. Originally, it was 10 for $300 million. This is an odd contract, isn't it? Because, like I said, it's one thing to have a deal that carries you, that covers a guy through his arbitration years and maybe one or two free agent years. But this basically, it's almost like a lifetime deal for Giancarlo Stanton, because if he signs the extension at 25, this carries him through
age 36. This pretty much ties him and the Marlins together. And do you really want to do that if you're Giancarlo Stanton?
Well, first, Jeff, when you mentioned those figures, I thought you were talking about your contract.
No, that would be that would be $32,000 if we were talking about my contract.
Okay.
That McCowan's contract is $300 million.
There you go. First things first here with the Stanton talks. On a certain level, Jeff, I'm obviously once we heard about what the dollar value was, then it made sense that Giancarlo was talking with the Marlins about this. But let's be clear about this. There was for a long period of time, going back to certainly the offseason in which the Marlins made the trade with the Blue Jays when he issued his famous tweet, okay, there was a long period of time where Giancarlo Stanton, almost regardless of what the money value was being discussed, was not inclined to sign with the Marlins long term because of his reservations about the direction of the franchise, the fact that it had been sort of built up and torn apart so many times, that he really wondered if this was a place that you could win consistently. But I think two things have changed. Number one, the team played better. I think certainly the way they played this past season, even with Jose Fernandez injured, they remained relatively competitive throughout the season, which I think sent a pretty good message to him first and foremost. And certainly maybe a second concern, obviously, is the fact that he was hit in the face with a pitch, and maybe there is some element of perspective introduced to his thought process that this all can go away in one pitch, and perhaps it's not a bad idea to secure my future, my family's future, and my great-grandchildren's future with this contract. And I also think the third thing, Jeff, is you've got a chance now. And Stan has talked about, he did a great interview with our colleague Ken Rosenthal about how he views his place in the game and wanting to be that star that people pay money to go see, even on the road, that he's that guy that everybody wants to watch play. Well, if you got a chance to put the title next to you as highest paid athlete in the world, more than Ronaldo, more than Messi, more than Miguel Cabrera, Clayton Kershaw, LeBron James, Aaron Rodgers, you name it, highest paid athlete on the face of the planet, that's a pretty good little marketing thing to put in your Twitter bio. So I think that from that standpoint, once the money got to this level, Jeff, it's just best you cannot turn down $300 million, I think, in this situation, regardless of any reservations you may still harbor about the direction of the franchise.
John Paul Morosi joins the Jeff Blair Show. I'm wondering if the fact that we haven't heard any, at least to, you know, for public consumption, we haven't heard anybody from the commissioner's office kind of, not try to put the kibosh on it, but express some of the more negative aspects of a contract of this size. Does this suggest that maybe we're into a different era now in baseball where it's okay to spend vast amounts of money on guys that you've drafted and or developed on your own? In other words, it's an easier sell to the commissioner's office to say, look, this is our guy. We're investing in our guy. It's not a free agent. We're not going out and blowing the doors off the free agent market, although, you know, essentially in some ways, if Giancarlo Stanton gets $30 million bucks a year, there's going to be some sort of effect in the free agent market. But is it kind of telling, John, that we haven't heard anything from the commissioner's office? Because I can remember when the Jays signed Carlos Delgado. This is back when Paul Godfrey was running the team. And Bud Selig just ripped into Godfrey at the World Series. Godfrey and the Jays at the World Series when that deal was done. And we haven't heard anything yet.
That's a great insight there, Jeff. And I think that when you look at the big picture here, a couple things. Number one, this contract is inextricably linked to the health of that franchise. This is a franchise that obviously the commissioner's office has spent, one would say, an inordinate amount of time to get healthy, okay, to the point that obviously they've had the ballpark. There were the concerns a couple off seasons ago with the fire sale part 3 or 4 or whatever it was. And I think the commissioner's office does take something of a case-by-case approach to when they would selectively slap the wrist of a franchise if a contract is really out of whack. But here you have clearly a franchise player, just finished second in the MVP vote last night, arguably the best position player in the National League, maybe the best position in baseball if you want to compare him to Trout or McCutchen. He's in that discussion. You got to look at this and say it is imperative for this franchise's health to sign this player. Because if you don't, then where have they gone? If you don't sign him, then why was there all the effort to build the ballpark? If you cannot sign this franchise player, then basically, to take it to an even more esoteric level, why are you in business, okay? You had to trade Miguel Cabrera, future Hall of Famer, 7 years ago because you could not afford him with your ballpark. Now you have the new ballpark. You now have one of the elite position players in the game. What's the story here? Why would you not sign the player? So I think in this case, again, no salary cap in baseball, so obviously there is upward pressure on some of these things. I think the commissioner's office, Jeff, to put a finer point on things, they might be more concerned with what's going to happen in the relief market, because Andrew Miller is going to set a record, I believe, and whether it's $7 million, $8 million a year on a free agent contract for a non-closer relief pitcher, okay? And that is the type of contract, if all of a sudden the price of a really good setup man becomes $7 or $8 million a year instead of what it used to be at about 2.5 or 3, then things are really kind of out of whack, because that's the type of player that just about 30 teams need to sign, okay, a good setup reliever. That's about 30 teams need to sign that. Only one team can sign Giancarlo Stanton. So I think maybe on that you're right, but I also think this is, when you talk about $9 billion of revenue, Jeff, that money's got to go somewhere, and it's got to go back in the players at some point, at least on some level.
John Paul Morosi joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. You mentioned Andrew Miller, and we're led to believe, well, we know the Jays have spoken to Andrew Miller's agent. We also know that the Jays were, at least according to David Dombrowski, seemed to be aggressive in pursuing Victor Martinez. We know that they're going after Russell Martin as well. But a couple of questions. One, what do you take away from the Jays' aggressive approach to Victor Martinez? And secondly, if Andrew Miller does go for $7 or $8 million, and I presume we're looking at 4 years maybe for him. That doesn't sound like an Alex Anthopoulos deal with a reliever to me.
No. And I do think, and here's the thing, and I wrote about this a little bit earlier in the week at FoxSports.com, pointing out that this is now Alex's sixth offseason as the Blue Jays general manager. In the first five, the largest contract he handed out to a free agent in total dollars was 2 years and $16 million to Melky Cabrera, which is just barely more than the one-year qualifying offer, okay? So this is clearly, the price of poker is way higher than what the Jays have been willing to do in the past. Now, it sounds like, based on Paul Beeson's comments to you a month ago, that the payroll is going to go up, that maybe there are some ways to spend perhaps more creatively this winter time than has been the case in the past. But I think the important thing to note here is this just has not been Alex's approach. He is not a big fan of the free agent market. All that being said, I think the Jays made a very good move with Devin Travis. I think he's got a chance to be their second baseman this year. I also think they need to get a little bit more insurance when you talk about a guy that can maybe play multiple positions. That's why I think actually Hanley Ramirez, you know, makes as much sense and maybe even more sense than Victor Martinez did, because look around the infield. At first base, you're not necessarily sure, is that going to be Edwin's job? You need a DH. Maybe Hanley could DH a little bit. Jose Reyes' history tells you he's going to get hurt, and Brett Laurie's history tells you he's going to get hurt. That's what it says. They're both really good players when they're on the field, but the history says they're going to miss time in the coming season. That's just what their track record says. So to me, you've got to get one more proven infielder, and that could be Hanley, and then Hanley could maybe play a little bit of short, maybe even a little bit of second, a little bit of third, maybe even a little bit of first, DH. There's talk that he's willing to play the outfield. If he's truly willing to do these things, the Blue Jays are a perfect fit for Hanley. And oh, by the way, he could be rejoined up with Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Reyes, whom he won the World Baseball Championship, World Baseball Classic Championship with for the Team Dominican Republic, and had a blast playing for that team. Jose Bautista, of course, Dominican as well. And Reyes was the one shortstop, Jeff, over Hanley's career for whom he was comfortable moving positions, remember. So there's a strong relationship there, and I think that would be a really good fit. I think even better in some respects than Victor Martinez, because if Hanley is truly going to be position flexible, he really fits what the Blue Jays are trying to do.
John Paul Morosi, always good to talk to you, especially in a week that we've essentially turned the show into Red Wing Central.
Well, hey, I appreciate that. Big game on Sunday, okay? Wings Habs in Detroit. I'm trying to go. I'm in high-level negotiations right now, Jeff, with my 8-month pregnant wife to see if she'll let me go. I might be watching it on TV, but if I can get into the Joe Louis Arena, I will give you a full report from there, okay?
Well, I know one thing. I'm sure you or Rosenthal will tweet out the results of the negotiations before anybody else.
There you go. Breaking news. I may need to get Scott Boras to represent me on this matter, Jeff, because I think I'm negotiating from a position of weakness on this one, okay?
John, thanks very much for doing this. Have a great weekend.
You too, Jeff. Thank you.
Take care. John Paul Morosi, the national baseball writer for Fox Sports, joining the Jeff Blair Show. Hey, guess what? That's it for us this week. We'll be back on Monday. Time to turn it over to Hockey Central at noon, followed, of course, by Tim and Sid and Primetime Sports as well. Have a great weekend, everybody.